Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the NAACP podcast, When We Fight, We Win. I am Esther Matthews, the president of the St. Petersburg branch, NAACP branch number 5130. Today's topic will focus on economic sustainability while asking the question, does everyone really have the ability to live the American dream? Today we have Pastor Elizabeth Siplin. Pastor Siplin is the pastor of New Faith Free Methodist Church, owner and founder of Empath Solutions, founder of Second Chance Empowerment Foundation, the economic development chair of the NAACP. Pastor Siplin also sits on the board of the Interdenominational Ministerial Alliance, Career Source Pinellas, the ADI Foundation, She Purpose, and last but certainly not least, she is a retired Army Sergeant Major. Thank you for your service, Pastor Siplin.
Thank you.
Also with us, we have Jade Williams, a graduate of William and Mary with a degree in chemistry. She's currently seeking her master's degree at USF with a focus on biomedical engineering. And she is the president of Second Chance Empowerment Foundation and also the daughter of Pastor Siplin. Welcome, Jade.
Thank you.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. So today we have a power-packed conversation. We're going to cover several points that factor into the American dream for many of us, right? So when we think of the American dream, we think of what does it look like to own a home? We think of, right, the city that we live in. What is the cost of living? And then we also think of satisfaction in the neighborhoods that we live in. Oftentimes, when we look at where we're going to move, we do. We ride through the neighborhoods, right? We ride through at different times. Mm-hmm. And we want to know not only that we are safe in environment, but also safe in neighborhoods. So I'm going to flip it a little bit. We're going to talk about satisfaction in neighborhood first. I know that Pastor Siplin and Jade have been working on some studies with the NAACP Economic Development Committee. So I want to bring you guys in and let's talk about that a little bit.
Awesome. So first of all, just glad to be here with President Esther, who is awesome, and
thank
my
you.
Daughter. Thank you for joining me and thank you for inviting us. So some of the work we're doing in the community is our environmental disparity study, mm-hmm. where we're going into the neighborhood and looking at, it's not hard to see, but taking a deeper dive into our neighborhood at our grocery stores, our local stores, our gas stations, and letting it look like the entire city. Mm-hmm. I know the mayor talked about bringing, you know, the downtown up to, you come here and it's plush. Mm-hmm. But when you go into the neighborhoods, we want the same look and feel.
Absolutely. I love that. Love that. And recognizing, I remember, and I should have said that Pastor Siplin is actually also a new class in the Leadership St. Pete class of 2022.
Yep.
I'm remembering that because I was class of 2021 Leadership St. Pete, and I remember our trip from North St. Pete into South St. Pete, and it was almost night and day.
Yeah.
And the conversations that I had with my classmates were tied around those disparity conversations and why one side of the area didn't look like the other side of the area. And also recognizing that oftentimes people say we live in two cities within the one city of St. Petersburg, right? So how do we merge it so that it truly is one St. Pete?
Well, I want to hear from my daughter because a couple of years ago, when she came here from William and Mary, she's a little reluctant to talk this morning, 25 years old. But, you know, these young...
I am 23, y'all.
Okay, oh, so we got her to
23.
Talk. We got her to talk.
Don't get her, Jane. Don't get her.
23. She'll be 24 in May. I don't mean to age you, but we had talked about this being in the military, and she came here from Virginia, coming from all over the world. And the question was asked, why does everything look so different in despair? And so share with me what your thoughts were on the environmental study and why you wanted to pursue it.
I just think everybody should have equality. Like, absolutely. Just the way of life is not good. It affects, like, every area of your health, mm-hmm. you know, like the environment, your mental health. And, like, you wonder why African-Americans or, like, people in that situation, how they act, you know?
Right.
And it's due, like, to survival.
That's a key point, Jade. I remember having a conversation with a gentleman on 16th Street, and he basically said that he's in survival mode. Like, he can't think of what he wants to do 6 months from now, a year from now, because he's focused on surviving the day. And oftentimes, I think it's important when we look at how we can provide solutions, those are the ones that need to be at the table because they can provide the right now solution for them. We're only top rolling down what we think will fix it. So I think that was a really important point that you made.
And also, when you look at aesthetics, mm-hmm. aesthetics drive how you feel. Mm-hmm. When you walk into a place that's pleasing, like if you walk into a Wawa's, right. it's bright and, you know, it's like the environment, your mood changes. So we want that to happen in our community. And we talked to a couple of the store owners and managers there, and just listening at their perspective is we think that they don't care, but they do.
Mm.
And we found a couple of them. One in particular, he's actually stepped up, and we want to make him a model of our neighborhood shine. We're calling our campaign Neighborhood Shine,
mm-hmm.
where he has painted the outside.
Okay.
He's making it where people can't loiter outside. Mm-hmm. He's putting a fence up where they can't sit. So we had an in-depth conversation. He said people think we don't want our gas stations to look good or our stores, but that's not the case, you know. And so he wants to know how we all can tie in as a community. So if we never take the time to talk to them and just make assumptions,
right.
because I think that's what a lot was happening. And 9th Street, that corridor, mm-hmm. is actually changing. If you drive down there, the store owners are picking up trash. They are trying. So we just want to come in and make greater improvement to help our community and the mentality change.
I like that. So which store owner was that?
That was Sun City Pure.
Okay, okay.
So he's gone out. So one of the things we really want to tie in with the city, and Sharon Wright, I'll give her a shout out.
Yes, love
she
Sharon.
She has been
hey,
great.
Hey, Sharon.
Hey. But we want to try to do an asphalt or pavement improvement. Mm-hmm. Because if they're going to take the keys to fix up their stores and paint them and maybe get some of our muralists in and highlight that. Man, we have the Martin Luther King Drive, that thing they do. That should be a key point where we have our local people tied in.
Absolutely.
And getting the city, improving lighting, you know, so when people are on those streets or on those stores, they feel safe, they feel confident, and just like North versus South Side or downtown,
right?
It's no disparity.
There should be a seamless transition and it should all look the same.
One interesting tidbit fact about, you know, like just the cleanliness of it. Mm-hmm. So the North Side usually had like more trash cans than the South Side.
Interesting.
So there should like be more availability for that, you know?
And so maybe that's something as a organization we need to really have a conversation with the city about. So, Jay, what I hear you saying is that just in factors, North Side neighborhoods have more garbage cans.
Mm-hmm.
Is that in the alleys or?
Just like everywhere. Just like there's like more trash cans everywhere. And so that also like affects the environment and, mm-hmm. you know, like the mindset of the people. Because like where you're just throwing your trash just on the ground. And so exactly. then you're just like living in this type of environment that's just dirty, you know?
That leads me to another thought that I was having, right? So I know, and guys, I call her Pastor Slipping, but it's Liz because she is my sister. So I gotta transition just a little bit. So Liz, I know that you spoke to the neighborhood associations.
Right.
Talk to us a little bit about how those engagements look north versus south.
also talking with the president. I think it's Lally.
Tom Lally.
So they invited us into the meeting, and they had probably over 40 members on that Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was a lot of engagement, a lot from the north side. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they have organized cleanups. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of organized things for the community, mm-hmm. to even where they're getting funding, I think, from the city or those match grants. What I found interesting was the activity that's going on in the south side is totally different. And in true transparency, he's saying he's trying to get those associations really activated.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking with Antonio Brown on Saturday about our project, they're very interested. I think it's something we just have to spark, like what we're doing, the NAACP. We're taking a lead role, but we are not going to be the leaders of the owners exactly. of it. Exactly. We want to put it back in the communities. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as a sergeant major, I do that well, right? We get the projects rolling, strategies. I have an awesome team that's been working with me, and I want to shout out to them. Mm-hmm. Is Marty mm-hmm. and Christy. They're on the NAACP.
Okay, shout out Marty and Christy. Hey,
yeah.
y'all.
And so they're in the IMA. So they're the ones that went out and did the survey with us. But we figured it's a grassroots project.
Okay,
it's a community
okay.
project.
Yes, it is.
And we definitely want everybody to be tied in. We don't take ownership
mm-hmm.
because we want to be a collective. We want the owners of those stores mm-hmm. and those gas stations to have the ownership.
Absolutely.
And we're just helping them because the dialogue mm-hmm. was awesome with that young man. Muhammad speaking to him about his passion. Mm-hmm. When you walk in the stores, they are cleaned up. From when my daughter went out and took pictures, I was thoroughly amazed. It's almost like this project started before right. we even got there.
And that's the excitement in itself.
And so we do have one that really needs to be targeted that we're going to focus on getting a change. Mm-hmm. But I guarantee you, once the change has taken place,
yes.
it's going to be a different mindset of how people look at it.
I agree. And I think it's important for the business owners to feel supported. And then by default, the neighbors will feel the support from them. They're in our community.
Absolutely.
And the reality is many of us spend money with them. And so, hoping that there truly is a partnership across the line, I think is vital and important. And shout out to J.C. Pritchett, Executive Director for IMA and then President for the Tiger Bay. J.C. is doing some fantastic things. So, J.C., we NAACP has at least three of your people. We ain't taking them, but we definitely going to share them.
Yeah.
So thank you for that. You know, in this conversation, Liz and Jade, I was thinking this morning about how the satisfaction in the neighborhoods almost rolls also into, right, the housing market.
Right.
And it rolls into what homelessness looks like for our current community. I spoke to Amy Foster, and I speak to Amy often. For those of you who don't know, Amy is the CEO of Homeless Leadership Alliance of Pinellas and also one of our longer standing former city council members. She termed out and she is missed greatly. But Amy provided me with some numbers and the numbers were quick asked because I asked her and certainly the knowledge that she had it at the top of her head is bananas to me. But she said that currently we have 84 homeless families. These are adults and children's waiting on a shelter bed. There are currently none available.
Oh, God.
So that means that we have 84 families sleeping in places not meant for habitation or vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
We have 1,200 individuals waiting on the list to get rapid rehousing. And rapid rehousing is housing with wraparound services.
Okay.
And then on a global perspective, we have 19,000 people per year that hit Pinellas County's homeless system.
Oh, wow.
19,000.
Yeah.
So when we look at housing in our area, lack thereof, lack of affordability, and then the neighborhoods, what do you guys really think that looks like for us as a community?
So I can speak to that personally as a pastor because I have members that's in one of those categories. And it's really heart-wrenching when they're month-to-month living in this hotel because they don't have the housing, they can't find the affordability.
Mm-hmm.
So looking at it holistically, it's a shame. And so we're sitting here looking at this beautiful view of these high rises coming up that nobody can afford to live in. And so where is the hope and the love for our city residents, the true ones that's out here working?
Right. Yeah.
And to me, it's just like, my daughter's in that situation. She's blessed to where, you know, she's able to get some financial backing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But if she was 23 on her own, she wouldn't be able to afford to live here. Even as parents, you look at, like, how do we get our young generation to be able to step out on their own and support themselves when we have a city that has priced us out? Right. And it's very scary.
It is scary. And Jade, you're not alone. My daughter, 23 years old, mm-hmm. she lives with us. And she is consistently and dedicated to looking for housing. And there's nothing out there that she can afford. And she works full time. Yeah. And she, you know, has saved her money. You know, Commissioner Flowers said something the other day that just continues to ring in my head. Where are the developers with humanity?
Right.
Yeah.
Where are the developers that understand that, yes, they are developers who have a desire to make money?
Right.
But they also understand that they have to build in a way that those that currently reside in our area have the ability to attain that housing and live in it comfortably. I was talking to a friend of mine, Kara, and Kara and I were talking about certain towns up in New York, ski resorts and different places where when developers came in and built those areas out, they, in essence, killed the city.
Oh, wow.
They killed the cities because as you begin to build and develop, the people that live there, work and play, can't afford it.
Yeah.
And so you have people that come in and they purchase these properties and use them as vacation homes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And or use them as rental properties. And those of us that live here can't afford to rent them.
Yeah.
It's really sad and unfortunate that all of the things that we're so proud of in St. Petersburg are also like our Achilles heel.
Yeah.
And it's creating a limp for us.
So I would say that we have to take ownership. You know, I did an investment with a group, and I won't name them, mm-hmm. but we built a home and was able to sell it to a first home buyer.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we have to take ownership. Those that can afford to pool our money
mm-hmm.
and become the developers. Mm-hmm. I just sold a home in Georgia, and I have that money. I want to invest it. You know, we did a bid on a home. And we got outbid it. And everything almost has to be all cash.
Absolutely.
All cash in. Mm-hmm. So we have to take ownership of our neighborhoods. And we have to take them back. I like what Brother John said, buy the block back.
Yes.
But here's the disparity. Where my mom lives, is she bought her house for $14,000.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, the house across the street or down the street. So for $400,000. So how do we realistically buy our block back
right.
without being able to pool our money together? I mean, there's a few people that can write that check, mm-hmm. but we have to take ownership and be a collective again and say, hey, we're not going to do this, or we become the developers. And we have to learn to do that, because if not, we're going to lose this fight.
We're definitely, you know, on the cusp of losing the fight. You know, I think of those who, like you, Liz, and your collective, and others who have the desire. But the reality is can we really walk into a bank and get that funding?
Oh, yeah.
That now creates the additional challenge, right? Because we have several banks that have been noted in the news who deliberately will not give funding to African Americans.
Right.
And so, you know, it creates an additional challenge, you know, and shout out to my friend, my childhood friend, Freddie Simmons and Joe Eason, who have truly taken on the approach of buying the block back.
Right.
They're building and selling to first time homeowners at an affordable rate.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And allowing them to, again, achieve that American dream. Jay, talk to me a little bit. What are your thoughts in regards to this challenge as a 23-year-old, recent graduate,
mm-hmm.
coming back to St. Petersburg?
Mm-hmm.
What did you want to do when you came back home? And then what's the reality?
What did I want to do when I come back home? I go to school, be with my family. So I think I've been pretty successful in that aspect. Mm-hmm. But I do want to, like, eventually own a home, but I don't even know if I would be able to afford it here, because just my rent alone is, oh my gosh, it's crazy. Just for, like, 450 square feet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're trying to bump it up to, like, 1,500.
Wow, for 450
square feet,
$1,500 a month.
And she's downtown, right near the Dome, but... You know, if you want to live in the aesthetics of beauty, you're going to pay. And it, to me, it's crazy. She came from Virginia, two-bedroom apartment, almost 2,000 square feet.
And it was like 1,200.
I just kind of need to go back to 400 square feet, and they're wanting to go up to 1,500.
No, not wanting to. They have
gone up to 1,500. Wow.
There's some residents who are talking, and they're like, this is just crazy. Because, like, they keep bumping up the prices, but the quality of life isn't getting any better. Like, the aesthetics and nothing is changing. Just the price is changing.
So I had to go in and fight for her rent. And so it was interesting because... They're playing games. So let's talk about what the apartments are doing here. So they will price you out and say, hey, we don't have this available unless you go up. But if you go on their website,
it says that it's available.
It's available. So we played the game with them, and I'm going to be true and transparent. I made an appointment, and I want to see your apartment. And then, oh, by the way, now I'm coming to speak to the manager. How do you tell me you don't have a space available for me,
right,
but you're offering it to somebody else that's going to pay $1,500. So that's the mentality of these rental properties that's really taking advantage of people that were already grandfathered in.
Yes.
And then now you're trying to push them out and then bring new people in.
To get the extra dollars.
And that may need to be addressed, because if I started at $1,000 last year, how do you justify $400 or $500 more?
Yeah.
Right.
And so that in and of itself is crazy to me and sad, because we have college students, and most of the college students, who's paying that rent?
Right.
Their parents.
It's unfortunate that it's acceptable. I've pulled a report from the property appraiser, and it is immense, right? So I looked at the properties in 2019, 2020, 2021, and 2022. In 2019, I believe 12 properties were sold, and only one was sold to an investor. In 2020, I think I'm up at about 1,600 properties sold. And I'm still going through it, because I'm going through it and looking up the individual companies. But we're right at about 80% that were sold to investors.
Oh, wow.
And at first glance of 2021, even worse. And then 2022, I pulled it right until the 23rd of March.
Mm-hmm.
But when looking at Jade, you, my daughter, Samantha, who is wanting to rent, right? So you're a young lady, you graduated from college, you want to be out on your own.
Mm-hmm.
A 400-square-foot apartment at $1,500, thank God for your mom. Because the reality is, you would literally have to work 2 to 3 jobs in order to sustain.
Yeah, and I don't even feel like I'm in the heart of downtown, you know? Like, I'm still on the verge of the south side. So it's like, I don't get it, because I'm not getting any views. Like, what am I paying that?
And so imagine the further east you travel, what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
There was a newspaper article maybe 2 or so months ago about a home that sold for $300,000 or was on the market for $375,000. And I think it was off of 12th Avenue and 9th Street, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
And it created a huge hoopla on social media because of where it's located,
mm-hmm.
what it was priced at, and what it looks like for the community. And then they began to have talks about gentrification.
Right.
Yes.
And are we now looking that in the face?
Yes.
And so what does that look like for us as a community when we're launching into that? And I get very, very, you know, passionate about this, because that's really what we're looking at.
Yeah, I think my daughter, I don't know if she had something to say. We know exactly where you're talking. Mm-hmm. And so it's the same in my mother's neighborhood. Mm-hmm. When I got here, the home was worth $120,000, which you go on now, it's $300,000+. How in that short span? It's okay when you own the home.
Right.
But it's not okay. And that neighborhood looks nothing like my mom's neighborhood. I mean, you have, let's call it out for what it is. You got drug dealers. You got, you know, illicit things going on in the neighborhood. So what it really says is they're going to move those people out.
Absolutely.
The plan is it's about 5 new homes on that block that have come up. Mm-hmm. People don't look like the people that live there. Mm-hmm. And so eventually you're going to have to leave in a neighborhood where you were already established.
Right.
But I got my mom's mentality. We're going to sit on this front lawn and watch you.
Absolutely.
We're not going anywhere. And so I want to speak to people of my generation and my daughter's generation. When our parents leave us property, mm-hmm. we keep that property.
Yes.
We
yes.
pull together to pay the taxes and we come in and improve that property because we will lose a stronghold
yes.
in our communities.
Yes.
If we don't hold on to the homes that they bought at $1,425,000,
right.
you know, $2,500,000 or whatever dollars, we will lose that stronghold. And it's very saddening to see that people can't even pay the property tax of the homes they left, or we don't do the proper paperwork to have it deeded in
Absolutely.
Your name. And so that's just something we have to also speak to our community, because every day we get these things to sell our home. Where are you going? You take that offer, where are you going?
Absolutely, because you definitely can't purchase anything in the city.
Outside of St. Petersburg.
Absolutely. It was funny, Liz and Jay, because while we were sitting in, the Manhattan Casino, a couple weeks back for the housing committee meeting, I got a text message.
Mm-hmm.
And the text message said, "Hi, Esther," because they know you by name now. "Hi, Esther. Wanted to reach out. Do you think it would be a waste of time for me to make an offer on your home at such and such, such and such?" And then they listed the address. And it was funny because Commissioner Flowers was sitting behind me and I made mention of it during the meeting. And so she said, and so when I get those, I respond back and say, "Well, no, but I'm actually in the business of purchasing homes. Are you interested in selling yours?" And I did it.
Yeah.
And so the response back, the person laughed and said, "Well, no, I'm not interested in selling my homes. However, if other homes come up, we can certainly see if you would be interested." What you said, Liz, is key, because we really, 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 really have to be intentional with the education piece to families, that when you own a home and it transitioned from great-grandma to grandma to mama to you, keep it.
Keep it. Mm-hmm.
Whatever you have to do, keep the house. And maybe it doesn't look like the house that looks next door, and maybe it needs a whole lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just simply take the time to fix it up, but do not let it go, because the reality is when you let it go, you will not be able to purchase anything in this city, really, from moments past moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
My same friend Kara got a call to purchase some property. And when she found out that this property was owned and had been owned for generations in the family, she refused to purchase it. What she did was educated the person on the need to keep it.
Right. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I was going to say is they have so many programs out there that you can qualify for to help you improve the home.
Absolutely.
Urban League has the weatherization program.
Absolutely.
City has another program that can come in. So if you meet those certain requirements, and even as a homeowner,
mm-hmm.
I love the way the Urban League did it. You may own a home, but if somebody's renting that house, they will still come in
mm-hmm.
and help, especially the elderly and
right.
the veterans. I mean, they have programs. So that's what we did to Mama's house. You know, it didn't have that great feel, but I had a list and I made a list and I said, "Okay, we're going to do this, do this, do this." And we'll work the list off until you get comfortable. So this will be generational property. Now, my daughter might not want to live in it, but it's owner. And you start with equity.
Yes.
And so that's the key thing that people don't realize. You start with something. That's how a lot of cultures do. Mm-hmm. They take out these insurance policies or they leave property. So you start with something.
That's the legacy.
And our people don't understand, you know, starting from nothing, starting with equity is better than starting with nothing. Absolutely. Because it builds you up. You know, it's like a credit builder that we don't have and we haven't done well. So I just hope the city gets this right. Mm-hmm. I hope we don't become a balloon city where it explodes and blows back in our face, where all the people have moved out because you priced them out.
Yes.
But now you have a hollow city.
Nobody to work.
Empty buildings. Yes. And then now it's going to turn into, oh, we're going to ask you to come back. And so we don't want that.
We definitely don't want that, because the reality is that when people can't work and play in a city, they transition to the cities that they can work, play, and live in.
Absolutely.
And so we definitely don't want that to be St. Pete's story. Shout out to Reverend Watson Haynes and Miss Charlotte Anderson and the work that they're doing at Urban League and have been doing, and how intentional they have been with ensuring that those programs and services are available. I want to make sure, Liz, that we have really captured all the Economic Development Committee is doing.
Right.
Inviting those who are listening in, please join us. I'm going to turn the mic back over to Liz so she can do her shout out.
Okay.
And then we'll circle back.
So some of the other programs we've been looking at, and we have other committee members, the newly passed CBA for the city. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure we stay connected with that. Mm-hmm. And there is equity in minorities and small businesses getting those contracts. Right. I have talked to the new city procurement. Mm-hmm. Is it Mr. Malone?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So he says he's going to be very, very intentional in getting small businesses and minorities in that. So I will be tying in with him.
Awesome.
We're tracking the TROP development because that too has a piece and a key to this Neighborhood Shine program. It has a key to the CBA and just small business in general, making sure we're getting certifications we need and educating them on getting capital, lines of credit, so they can compete for contracts and being ready and capable to do the work. So those are some of the things we're working on.
Love it. Love it. Listen, we secured a gem of the gems when Pastor Siplin joined us in the work of the NAACP. And I am ever grateful and appreciative for all that you are doing and also all that you have done, especially coming in where economic development wasn't even in place. So thank you. Thank you, Jade. Thank you for loaning us your mom. You know, people will often say to me, does the NAACP pay? And I said, it pays in hard work and love. And the truth of the matter is, those of you guys who are listening in, is that we are not, there's no salary attached to this work. But I do believe in my heart of hearts that when you are passionate about your community, and you're passionate about ensuring that the benefits and the equity is centrally focused and quite even across all facets, then that in itself is pay enough. And so, again, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Liz. Thank you, Jade. I wanted to make sure that I provided one other resource. I know, again, when looking at the numbers that Amy Foster shared, you know, we have to make sure that we get the information out there. If you are facing homelessness or if you are on the brink of a financial challenge that can potentially lead you into homelessness, please reach out to the Homeless Leadership Alliance. In addition to that, you have 211 of Pinellas. 211 is headed by Mickey Thompson, who's the president and CEO, and my friend Edward Perry. Edward, we're going to go to lunch soon, I promise you. Vice President of Programs and Services. They are doing a great job of navigating, ensuring that there is up-to-date information on the services that the organizations have. So please use your resources. Do not allow yourself to feel that there is nothing or no options out there for you. Call, 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 tap into the resources so that you can potentially receive some level of service. So with that being said, again, thank you, Pastor Sipplin. Thank you, Ms. Jade Williams, for joining us on today's podcast, When We Fight, We Win. Again, today's topic was economic sustainability, while asking the question, does everyone really have the ability to live the American dream? I am Esther Matthews, president of the St. Petersburg branch, NAACP. I welcome you to join us in the fight of our branch. We have a lot of work to do. And if you have a desire to really make a difference and see a change, please come and join us. As I did in the last episode, my contact number is 727-900-1170. I look forward to having the conversation about the work with you. Thank you for listening in.